Welcome to Wheel to Wheel, the premier Formula One podcast by two returning ladies who know medium to nothing about Formula One.
The Silverstone Grand Prix brought more frustration for championship contender Charles, a maiden win for his Spanish teammate Carlos, and shocked crowds with a gravity-defying crash in the first lap.
I'm Zaylee.
And I'm Maya.
Lights out and away we go!
I always clap. I always clap. How are
it
you,
Zaylee?
It does
feel clap-worthy. I feel good. I'm doing well. I'm a little bit discombobulated.
Why is that?
I'm a working gal, and I just have to work on July 4th, which is a lot, and after this, I'm going to be working, and I'm stressed. I'm stressed.
For our listeners who are international, it's July 4th.
But we're not celebrating anything.
We're not really celebrating, no.
No.
We're anti-July 4th. We're anti this
country.
We're anti.
I asked an Uber driver, what are you doing for July 4th? And he was just like, I'm protesting. And then he showed me his bandana and, like,
what he was protesting for. July 4th.
Yeah, but he made me feel bad for not, even asking.
Poo-poo. I saw a bunch of people in 4th of July gear at Prospect Park today, and I was like, the distasteful. Which is, like, fun. It's not, but, like, it is kind of, and I just think that times have changed so much, because I wouldn't have thought that when I was, like, a kid or younger, but now I feel
it
like
is distasteful. No uncouth. Flag looks good. No flag looks good.
I know, and I think about that. I'm like, if I were a Formula One driver, I don't know that I would feel that, like, same pride of, like, carrying an American flag. I think I would rather throw up, personally.
You have to race under the Puerto Rican flag, obviously.
Oh, my God, yes, I so would.
I'm going to race under the black nationalism flag.
Yeah. We only race under the New York State flag. It's like, I don't claim everything else. I'm sorry, bro.
I would have to sing Lift Every Voice and Sing during my podium celebration.
The black happy birthday song instead.
All right. Well, one flag that looks good is the checkered flag.
Nice. Very nice.
I think my transitions are getting pretty good.
I think they are getting really
okay,
good.
Okay, me, headline first. Okay.
Okay, I can do one. I'll do one.
We all know what the biggest headlines are going to be.
Oh, yes, dude. Yeah. I didn't even bring those because those were already like on the table. Let's
discuss. Great. I brought those. I'm curious what yours will be. So go ahead now. Now I want
mine are like kind of more boring, but I thought this was interesting.
What?
Lando Norris trialed a new pedal cam at Silverstone.
Okay, yeah.
And
this
it's
is
just
boring.
Like a. Yeah,
what is,
right?
What is a pedal cam?
It's a video of the feet, of his feet on the pedals. And it hasn't been done since 2000. Like, the last time someone did it was the Belgian Grand Prix in 2000.
How many pedals are down there, if you don't mind me asking? Did you see any clips?
From what I can see, it's two pedals. But I'm like, maybe this is something for the foot people in the world. I'm just like, how much more do we have to see of the drivers? We see the head. We see the porpoising. Do we need a butt cam next?
Maybe we need, like, a heat camera so we can see, like, their actual bodies, like, moving in the car.
We need like an x-ray.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thermocam.
That's interesting. What other shots would I want to see? I wouldn't mind seeing their eyes, like if it was inside the helmet. An eye cam, that would be dope.
That would be interesting, and I think it would actually add a lot to like crash analysis, because you can see where the driver's attention was at what point. It might be it might get too complicated though.
You could also see them talking to the, what do you call them? To the pit wall. So, like, they could press the button and you could see their lips moving as they're, like, freaking out, which would be so intimate and cool. The reality is, like, this feels super invasive for F1, but in most sports, everyone wears their emotions on their face. When you're yelling at the coach, you see it. Like, F1 is actually pretty private, which is annoying.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of technological advances that surround the sport, and I think they're just kind of like, okay, what else can we do to like enhance it? It's kind of like when an iPhone gets an upgrade and it's like, what else are we gonna do to like make this more interesting to watch or engage with? And I think they're just kind of going that direction.
I'll tell you what, drone shots aren't it. I'm not a big fan of the drone shots. They actually give
shaky.
Me nothing. And by the way, during the last podcast, which I don't even think we put out, so maybe people haven't heard this conversation. But no, we did. We were talking about how 400,000 people seems like a lot for these race weekends based on the drone footage. And somebody made it clear that the drone footage is actually separate. Like the number that they're coming up with is the number of people who've attended anything that race weekend, and not necessarily what happened, not necessarily on race day. But even still, it's like 100,000 people are in that crowd.
Even still. It's no. It, yeah, even still, no. I would say it's impressive. No, the other piece of news, which maybe you also had, was about the protesters who stormed Silverstone.
Oh, which, that didn't make my news, but yeah, that is funny and like weird.
It's weird, right? So there were protesting big oil company. They were like, I don't know. Yeah, it's eco related. Mm-hmm. I know that Lewis Hamilton was like, big ups to the protesters, man. Like, that was his vibe. And Sebastian Vettel was also like, yay, protesters, like, good for them. Because, you know, he's very green, okay. Lean and green.
Okay, yeah.
But you know who didn't like the protesting? Ted.
Let me guess.
Oh, yeah, I should have let you guess.
Oh, Ted Kravitz?
Ted Kravitz didn't like the protesting. He was like, this is so
dangerous.
None
of those British people like it. Even the people on the broadcast were like, why would they do this? Like, you never do that. It could kill people. It sounds like such a bad idea.
I don't think it's that bad of an idea. Mm-hmm. I think, but I'm also, this is like, we're so American in that protesting is always a good idea. Like, I don't know what it's like in the UK. Yeah. I don't know what it's like elsewhere. And I guess the older I get, I'm more like, protest, just do it. Get on the track. Who cares?
I just, what if someone died, Maya? Then what would you say that was for the cause? Did they walk out on track knowing that a car could hit them at 160 miles per hour and potentially kill like 10 people? Or were they just like walking out at a different time? Like, when did it happen? Was it literally during the race?
So they entered the circuit shortly after the opening lap, after the race had been, but after the race had been red flagged. So it really wasn't like, and the, you know, obviously the race was red flagged for quite some time. So, and there were 7 people, they were all arrested.
There's only 7.
I know, it's quite small. They got wind of this and the police were like, please don't protest. We've heard that it might happen. Please don't think of the safety. And they did anyway.
Okay. So it sounds like they were kind of safety conscious. Because if they really wanted to do it, they would hop out there.
Oh, my God. They didn't want it right to go into, like, roadkill. Yeah. They want to live, too. Dang. Live to fight another day,
you
bro.
You never know. No, some people are, like, climate... I'm thinking...
Nihilists.
I was going to say Unabombers, but, like, yeah, climate nihilists, climate... what do you... Like, kamikazes. But, okay, so during red flag mode, yeah, I don't see why not.
Right?
I don't see why not.
Agreed. All right, so what do you want to talk about?
All right, so I'm going to do one headline after the other because I feel like they're kind of related.
Go for it.
First, Hamilton was called this, you know, slur, this racial slur, which, blah, blah, blah. I, like, kind of don't have anything new to say about it. I will say that on the BBC, they were talking about it, and this one guy was just like, I feel like he's has a sense of relief, honestly. Like, I don't know, I'm a white man, but he probably feels a sense of relief. Because at least it's like out and people are being forthright about it. And so no one can deny that this is happening because basically he's saying for years, Lewis has had to be so like he has had to point out things that are subtle. Mm. And this is very obvious. Mm. But I thought that was just like such an out of touch thing to say. And just British people, Europeans are so weird. Like, why would you ever say that?
I actually understand what he's saying, but it's also like, no. Like, and to your point,
well, why say sense of relief? Just say, I bet Lewis is feeling like, I don't know.
What he's actually saying is like, I'm glad I could see this as a white person because now I realize that it's something that like actually happens and is not fake and made up. You're like, oh, damn, like this really happens. And black people are like, yeah, we told you this really does happen. And what was the other piece of news that you had?
And the other piece of news that was kind of related because I assume Bernie Ecclestone basically was doing a little circuit to do an apology tour for his friend Nelson Piquet,
bro.
But former F1 ex boss,
yeah, he was a Domenicali, right,
of F1, yeah, of his day. He said he would take a bullet for Vladimir Putin, which is just insane. I think he went on the show to say something nice about Nelson Piquet because I can't imagine a situation in which Bernie Ecclestone would be like on Good Morning Britain or whatever this was. When it was pointed out that Russia's invasion of Ukraine had claimed the lives of thousands of innocent people, he said it wasn't intentional.
It was or wasn't?
It wasn't.
Okay.
Which, why is he speaking for this
world
leader?
Genocide.
And that's what I'm saying. This is something, remember at the primer of this show in the season? When I was just like, oh, like, there's literally a race war going on in F1. This is just for, like, further proof of that. There's so much race involved in the Lewis, Hamilton, and Max thing. And there's so much race involved in the fact that people are like,
there's race in the race.
There's race in the race. Literally, there's so much race in the race.
That could be a good episode title.
Ooh.
Let's pin that.
What? Wait, yeah, that's this episode title.
Yeah. Okay, so Silverstone, what do we have? It's a track in England. Two-stop strategy was the best strategy.
Long track. I think that is kind of important that it's, like, pretty long.
I didn't say this, but, like, the last seven race winners have been English, which is just interesting.
Have been...
Lewis. Lewis and English. But also I thought was interesting was that Charles Leclerc, they said, this is his best track. Like, he's won the most at Silverstone. Mm. Which I didn't know, and I thought was remarkable.
I didn't know that either. Yeah, and I also remember that.
Nope.
I also remember that last year Hamilton won at, like, a, you know, overtaking Charles at the last moment.
That, and I completely forgot about that until this race. I was like, oh snap! I can't believe they were, like, fighting. The girls were fighting at certain points.
Yeah, no, they were beefing. Silverstone is. I do think it's also especially mixy because it's before summer break. But it's after people have done a lot of races and the tensions are high on so many different things. Like, it's the point where, like, the politics are starting to reach a peak and people are tired and people are just getting exhausted with the sport and also starting to, like, dig in with their teammates and just the dynamics are becoming clear about who's winningest.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's also at a good place in the season, like the 10th race. Can be a turning point. Feels like a turning point. If you divide the season even into three, it's almost at the 1/3 mark. Almost.
Do you think that? Yeah. Mercedes. This is just a random question for me, but do you think that Mercedes has a chance at the title at this point in the race?
The championship.
Sorry. And yeah.
Like the drivers.
The drivers.
No.
Me neither. But I didn't even think so. Like at the beginning of the season, which was maybe not giving them enough credit. But
I think if this was like race 5. Then yes, but since it's race 10, this was also a race of attrition. How many people finished? 17, 16? Definitely there were, I think fewer than
4
20.
Or 5 DNFs. Yeah.
It was crazy. It was crazy.
A lot of DNFs. Something else that I noted this race, which is really interesting, was like the Charles Sainz dynamic and like what was happening between them, which was cool because it felt quite respectful for me, and it also felt like they had a chance a little bit to tussle and to race, and I appreciated watching that. And I feel like Carlos showed a lot of grit this race, which I feel like we haven't seen him show as much in other races.
All right, let's get into the race. We've whet everybody's appetite. I want to talk about the race. Like,
first three drivers, Carlos, Max, and Charles, right? And then Sergio, then Lewis. Amazingly, like, Max gets off really well. He overtakes Carlos, but Lewis just does the smoothest f-ing maneuver and is able to move in up from fifth into third like that, and it just looks really great and cool. But by lap two, bro, is
not
over,
even
bro.
Turn one.
Like, yes, turn one. Boom, we're
red
done.
Flag incident. Started the race. Alex Albon, Zhao Guan Yu, both taken to the medical center. It was the craziest looking crash.
It was. And they didn't show us enough of it, I thought.
They eventually showed it, but they were like very much trying to make sure he wasn't dead, I guess. Before they... That's the thing. They like don't want to show you in case he actually died. They don't want to show you the footage. Yeah, before they know he's okay. And then when they know he's okay, then they like show it. Because they're like, oh, this is so cool. And it's funny. They like go from being like, oh, obviously we want to make sure he's okay. To like, so he flips and then he flips again and then he takes a turn and then he's upside down. Like, it's, but
he
was
like
flipping.
A pancake, dude. Yeah. And the fact that he flew over the barrier to the, where the, almost where the fans were, I was like, whoa, that's intense.
Yeah. The fact that his head was scraping against the gravel, I don't even understand how that, like,
bro,
felt. It must have, and like you said, he was conscious the whole time, which is even worse, kind of.
Yeah, I think it's kind of worse. So then we also see George Russell sort of get out of the car. Did you see that? I feel like there are memes happening about that.
Yes.
Mans was like running across the track.
He gets out of the car. And what that means is that, so he gets out of the car. And because someone else touches it and starts to like move the car off of the track, it means he can't get back in the car. So that was like the first drama of the race, that George Russell, who didn't even have that much damage on his car when it was red flagged, got out to take care of Zhao Guanyu and try to see if he was okay, which what he could have done in that moment, I don't know, but I guess it is respectful to like stop. But I do mm-hmm. wonder how much he knew about those rules. Like, did he know he was taking a risk by getting out of the car?
I don't know. And it's interesting because we did see him really talking to one of the guys who whatever, who he's probably in charge of something. But he was really like going back and forth with him. Very Karen vibes.
Yeah.
Of like, this car can move on its own. We didn't hear exactly what he's talking about. But I bet he was like just trying to make a case for why he should be able to race again.
Yeah. He was arguing that like he told the people there, like when he got out the car, like, don't touch my car. And I guess they, that's what he said
that
happened.
That was on a flatbed immediately.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah.
Expeditiously. And it's kind of tea because George, this is George's first time not, this might be his first DNF this season. And it, if it's not, it's like definitely his first time like not finishing in top five because he's been a top five king.
Yeah, he broke the streak.
Since the start of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, since the start of the season. So I bet, and it's a home race, so I bet that was kind of tough to watch. Mm-hmm.
So then at the end of turn one, it gets red flags. And so all the good work that people have done immediately gets erased. And there was someone else who had a really amazing start as well, and their start immediately got erased. But it starts again with no Russell, no Albon, no Zhao. So we're already down to 17 drivers. And because
Pierre still racing?
He was still racing.
Okay.
And because they never finished lap one, everyone had to start in the same positions that they did on the grid, even though people were doing things. Like, people got to do things and make up places in that time. Which, and what do you think?
I don't know. I was thinking, I wrote this down. I was like, we have to discuss if that's fair or not. And I
say it's fair because they didn't exactly red flag it when the incident happened. But if they had,
that's true,
there would have been less movement. It's almost like they let them keep racing for a bit. Did you notice that?
Yeah, bro. That's what I was saying. I didn't get the sense the crash was serious because they like kind of moved on from it. And it was like, okay, we're just going to keep racing. Who knows what's happening in the back?
Yeah.
I think it's unfortunate, right? Because there are people who put in good work. Lewis is one of them. I don't know. I'm just like, any other way feels like it could be chaotic. You know what I mean? But especially if it doesn't, like, you don't stop it at a very clean place. It's like people are, like, mid-transition. They're moving up and down the grid. It's like, how do we know what makes the most sense? This makes the most sense.
Yeah, I guess that's part of it, that they red flag it when the sort of, like, impacts are over. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, red flagging it while someone's still being, like, dragged across the gravel. They red flag it when it's over and then... So, but that means that people will continue racing and that things will get erased. But anyways, so everyone comes back to the pits because it's a real red flag. Like, no one's going out. And everyone gets to do things to their car to fix it. Mm-hmm. And then we start again. And the first thing that I think I want to say about, like, this section of the race restart, I noted that Hamilton and Norris were battling for fourth.
Yeah.
But that's because Perez in front picked up damage after contact with Leclerc, which is tea. Leclerc is driving with a vengeance. I don't know what happened to him this weekend. I literally don't know what happened to him this weekend. Maybe he was shaken up by the fact that Hamilton overtook him at the start.
Yeah.
Right? Because Hamilton was able to get around him. And I think that that was like, okay, I'm coming in very freaking hot on the race restart. Nobody is getting past me. But he was just... I feel like he was already in a bad mood before everything happened to him, and has been in a bad mood for the past few weeks. Like, starting from Monaco, things have just been a shit storm.
I would actually say that both of them were driving with a vengeance, for sure. Perez was driving.
Perez and Charles,
for sure. Perez was driving people off the road today to no investigation. And I don't know. I see something similar drive. I just see a similar drive between the two.
But yeah, so Leclerc and Perez get into it, and Leclerc comes out with like 5 less downforce. Did you get the unit that they were using? They were like 5% less, or like he came out with like less performance than he had before that contact. The whole rest of the race, he was driving with a broken front wing, basically, or like a broken
Perez
part. Charles Leclerc.
Oh, okay.
Which made him like it, which is interesting because he was faster than Sainz. Even with that damage, which I think is embarrassing a little bit.
No, but then Sainz was able to pit and he had fresher tires and he was able to go further.
Yeah, he had fresher tires.
And, but there was also a point in the beginning where Leclerc was like, guys, I'm faster. Like, let me go ahead. And they're like, okay, we're going to tell him. We're going to give him the chance, sort of tell him he has to hit this number. And he wasn't able to hit it. But there was a little point before in which I think he was quicker. Yeah, no, I think he was quicker. I just don't think he was able to sustain the speed.
Mm-mm. So he won't, bro. He was
so that you're like, therefore.
and therefore, this weekend he was not quick. I was kind of embarrassed that this was his first win. That moment when they were like, okay, if you can get down to these lap times. But the commentary I was listening to, they were like, that's generous, even those lap times. And they're wasting time by not switching them.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of embarrassing just the level of interference that Ferrari had to do. Because we all know that if there was no radio communications, Leclerc would have lapped him and lapped him with damage. Like, literally having been handicapped by this. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of damaged parts and cars, Max, this race was, he came on strong, then they had the safety car restart, but then he like ran over someone, something. Was it from Perez? I think something Perez, something flew off Perez's car and it was like stuck in his tire. And that severely impeded his race today. It was not a good day for Max.
I'm shocked that you're not doing the usual, like, Max complained too much.
He did kind of complain. Well, he did complain a lot. He would complain and they'd be like, it's not affecting the car. Just keep driving. It's not. Like, and you always think they're kind of rude to him. And I did see a little bit of rudeness. But I don't know.
Yeah. He
was a non-factor to me this race because he came out strong. But then he sort of fell to the back. So.
Yeah. Apparently the floor is everything now. The floor is how they get downforce. Which actually reminds me of, I mean, obviously we know that Mercedes' floor is way different from the rest of the front runners. And I'm just very curious as to, like, if Mercedes runs over something, do they, and what was the conscious decision? Because they feel like they're very much focused on the front wing and getting downforce from that. Whereas I'm like, are they doing something right by having all the downforce in the floor?
Mm. Well, one thing that I found interesting in the commentary was that, like, the reason why Leclerc was able to drive so well is because this generation of cars, the front wing is not as important. Like, the front part of the car, I guess the chassis or whatever. Not the chassis. Just the front part. Yeah, the front wing is not as important as, like, the nose. Floor. And and other parts that are causing people more grievances.
But so, we were talking about that situation between Sainz and Leclerc, and it sort of, like, manifests itself when Sainz is, first, he's out ahead. He makes a mistake. Which is another reason
went into the gravel.
Yes, he ran wide and Verstappen was able to get in front of him. And that meant that Leclerc was on his tail. That's the reason why they were even in position like that. Yeah. It could have been the other way around with Verstappen in between them. But then that. And then they're battling for so long that, you know, Hamilton's right behind them coming up. Yes. And he's able to get ahead so much faster because of the drama at the front. Which is another thing that I felt like there were so many things that were just, you couldn't write this. You couldn't write this story. The battles are forcing other people, are giving other people the ability to come up. It's amazing. But yeah, so, and then after that little argument and the fact that, you know, Lewis is coming up and it's really exciting. This is when the race started to heat. I mean, it was already hot from when Zhou had that, like, 10 times flipped against the gravel. But I felt like seeing Hamilton come up. But how did that feel to you, just seeing Hamilton again? I was like, oh my God.
I don't know. I was excited to see it. It felt like the good old days.
It did of yore. I was like, is this Hammer time?
Oh, by the way, I was watching Bono and I was like, there was a certain shot of Bono and I was like, are you sexy?
No, he is. He's fully like buff.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, he's like, he's buff. I don't know if he's sexy, but he's really strong.
I don't know. I just liked the angle I was looking at him from. It was quite brief, but it was striking. Everyone was struck.
Google Pete Bonington and see if you agree.
Yeah.
That's his full name.
I'm not willing to, like, die on this hill, but I will say, like, I was like, oh, maybe you're sexy.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I'll agree with that. It's because they work out a lot. I think they have a culture of health and fitness.
I think they do. They probably have all the, like, they, like, acupuncture benefits, like, all the stuff Lewis probably does.
Peter Bonington did not always look like that. For sure.
He probably gets facials. They probably all do. No?
Lewis definitely does. Most facialized team for sure. They all definitely, they have the most facials percentage wise. Facials per person.
Facials per FPP.
Their FPP. Has to make sure your FPP ratio is high enough. All right, so the next kind of exciting thing to happen is that Bottas is out. So basically Alfa Romeo fully out of the race because Zhao got out the first point.
And I didn't even see why. Why?
Just nothing. Just his own mechanical failure.
Okay, so Zaylee, what did you think about the team orders happening between Charles and Carlos? Like, Carlos was able to pit while they left Charles out. I thought that was interesting.
Carlos was able to pit while they left Charles out, which was interesting. I have no idea why they did that. It felt like a decision. It felt like a decision for the team from the team to literally let Carlos Sainz win this race, which conspiracy theory loading, I feel like that was kind of what they wanted to happen. And this was a great opportunity for them to get it done, especially when Max was in P6 and was like no threat to Charles on a day like this. And so I guess they just did it to be nice, but it definitely didn't make sense. And it was definitely obvious that Leclerc was upset and he has reason to be upset. Yeah, it made no sense. Did you think it made any sort of sense?
No, I didn't think it made very much sense. And I don't know what long game they're playing. That's kind of what I was trying to figure out is like, what is the end game for how this is happening? Because I think Charles needs every point he can get at this point. He's DNF'd quite a few times.
Yeah, it's idiotic.
It's not helpful.
Their team strategy is so bad. And like even worse than that, I think the alternative would be, oh, they actually thought it was a good strategy. Like Hamilton pitted and they're like, okay, we need to pit one driver to cover it off and we're going to pit the number two driver at this moment to cover it off. But like not even thinking like, oh, wait, you put a number two driver on softer tires at the start of a race. Obviously, the softer tires are going to go faster, which low-key didn't happen for Hamilton, weirdly. Like I felt like he was kind of struggling against his tires and he wanted to stay on the hards, but it definitely happened for the Ferraris and like immediately Sainz overtook Charles. Which completely made sense.
Like that would happen with his fresh tires. Yeah, I don't quite understand why that happened. Or what the vibe is there.
But one of the things I loved to see was how much the crowd was responding to Hamilton every time he did something. Mm-hmm. Like just hearing those cheers is so freaking cool. And I don't know if they specifically like mic'd the cheers this way, but I feel like they don't usually do it. But definitely they have to, like, play it at a certain volume and, like, not let it get into the broadcast too much. So I feel like there is some engineering going on with the cheers.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did it for this race because it definitely, like,
hit
is important. Yeah, it hit when it needed to. It, like, also added to the
drama.
Coolness of the race. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, we've said this before, but just the fact that he was leading, there are points in which he was leading the Grand Prix, which is crazy because I feel like that, like, it just hasn't really happened this season. So that was
No, it hasn't happened this season at all. I guess, like, really close to the last moment of the race, Perez got past Hamilton. And it's weird because Perez was kind of, like, he was in the middle of nowhere for so much of it. And then just, I mean, he is in a Red Bull, so I guess he's faster than most in his field. But he, like, became a contender when he was really not relevant to the rest of the race for a very long time.
I'm with you on that. There were some people that I was like, huh? Like, I was surprised. Yeah. But this is not good, but I did see spoilers of how the race ended on Twitter. My dumb ass. But, like, in watching that, I was like, why? How does Perez end up in this position? Like, just as I was watching the race unfold, I wasn't quite sure. I agree. It just came out of nowhere.
I kind of don't even understand how Mick Schumacher went from, I think, 18th to 6th or 19th to 6th.
No.
Probably because so many people just freaking, you know,
didn't DNF the race.
Yes, which I'm sure helped him out quite a bit, but even still, like, to get his first points of the season on such a crazy drive from the back of the field was another, like, how did that happen again? Yeah, I wonder what Perez was thinking in that car. Now Perez is 34 points ahead of Max. I mean behind Max.
Boo. So
kind of close.
Not boo, sorry,
kind of close.
Close. Oh. No, that's super close. Yeah.
It makes me want to, like, compare the rest of the teammates. Like, how far is Carlos away from Charles?
Shall I pull it up? Give me a second. Okay, so in first place for the standings so far, Max with 181, Sergio 147, then Charles with 138, and then Carlos with 127.
Oh, my God, that's very close. See, like, Charles should be way ahead of Sainz, but I think that this win and the last race, Charles DNF'd or something?
He did not finish last year. Yeah, he didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't.
So, yeah, I guess that makes sense. But these differentials are funny as hell. Funny as hell. And don't reflect, like, so much of the subtext of this season is not represented by these points. Mm. So much of, like, the George Russell and Lewis Hamilton lucky, unlucky, weird thing that's happening with them. And now that was reversed this race, but it usually happens the other way around, is also not reflected in the points. Like, when you look at the points, you would get a whole different story from what's been happening, low-key.
Low-key.
You would think that Charles and Carlos are, like, neck and neck every weekend. And
but that's not how it feels.
I guess in a way they are.
Yeah.
No, but that's not how it feels.
And even the fact that we talk about the contenders for the championship as Max and Charles, like, in the points, it's technically Max and freaking Sergio.
Yeah.
But not in how we discuss it.
And then the last lap, Hamilton overtakes Leclerc.
To the raucous applause of the audience.
Yeah, to get into P3, which is, isn't that a reminder of last year?
It
is. He did the same thing. He overtook Leclerc.
So exciting. There's actually something I saw on on Twitter where they were telling Carlos to, like, hang back so that they can secure a 1-2. So, like, Hamilton was in third and Carlos was second. So they were like, hang back. And he's like, I have Hamilton behind me. He's like, what do you mean hang back? He was just like, you're telling me to do this? He's like, don't tell me this. Don't tell me this when Hamilton is the person behind me. Which is just kind of funny interaction.
Yeah, I guess that was what Ferrari was thinking when there was that second restart. They thought, if we just tell Sainz to go slower, he'll hold up Hamilton, mm-hmm. letting Leclerc get away with the lead. So maybe that was their strategy. Their strategy involved team orders, and they didn't expect Carlos just to say no and not listen.
Right.
Which is, I want to be in that Ferrari debrief so bad.
Me too.
Charles was being so, like, did you see that he was getting a talking to by Mattia Binotto?
No. What?
Right after the race, before the media, Mattia was, like, pointing his finger. Yeah, Mattia Binotto was just pointing in his face and being like it was like a wagging, like,
you better not this and you better not that.
I think just like trying to get ahead of the fact that Charles was about to go out there and be like, my team violated me today on multiple occasions, like, they always do this to me, which he would be well within his right to say.
Yeah, I feel like, I wonder if he feels like he's a little bit fighting a journey on his own. Like, I think just because the team orders, this is like a really good example of how wonky it is. I don't know that Mattia is making the best decisions. I almost like want to even see him engage and react more when things happen. We've talked about this. So I'm just curious how he feels towards his, like, just towards the championship and the team dynamic.
Yeah, I guess they just think it's, oh my God. I just finished watching an episode of a Scenes from a Marriage. So I'm thinking about this. Mm. But remember when Jessica Chastain is like, oh, like, a marriage is like a very delicate, it's like an equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you, anything can just the whole thing up. That is how I feel like Ferrari is operating. They're mm-hmm. just very scared to poke the bear. They don't want people to be arguing on their team. And I think they're very nervous to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And that, like, comes out. And that also checks out about the rumors I've heard about just their culture of fear and how everyone's scared to make decisions there because they don't want to get blamed for anything. Yeah, even the lap times felt like a lot. There was a lot of trepidation over what they were going to tell the drivers to do in the next moment. And they don't even know that the drivers will listen. And obviously, Carlos feels like he doesn't have to listen. He literally was like his own race engineer.
I'm trying to think if there's something else I wanted to say about this race overall.
One thing I wanted to share that I thought was interesting is that Charles tweeted after the race.
Mm-hmm. What did he say?
And he's like, well done to Carlos Sainz on realizing a childhood dream. You deserve it, period. No exclamation point. Then he says, on my side, I'm incredibly disappointed, period. Damaged car in lap one, but we were flying, period. Great flights on track, but I couldn't do much more having old tires at the end of the race, period.
Oh, that sounds really loaded.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. They're fighting. I know they're fighting. I know they've been fighting since Monaco. Because, like, even before then, it was a bad time, but I think Monaco was the first time it was all on Ferrari's hands, what had transpired that day.
Oh, it's giving subliminals on subliminals.
Yeah, even, like, congrats on realizing a childhood
dream. I know.
You deserve it.
That's a little belittling. Yeah. That's a little demeaning in a way.
Yeah.
It's like, it's cute. It's your first race win. Oh, so cute.
Well, he's a prince. He's tantruming right now. Not that he doesn't deserve to, but I'm just saying it gives very much, like...
Yeah.
But what a finish. That was an amazing race.
It was really fun. And it reminded me of the good old days of last season. It felt... Yeah, it was refreshing.
And I think it also goes to show, like, even if Mercedes is not a championship contender, just being there makes spices things up so much. Mm-hmm. Them not being just somewhere stuck between the front runners and the Alpines or like whoever else is behind the flavor of the week that day. Like, that is amazing for them to actually be racing and, like, shaking things up and throwing things around and just tossing things around like a salad.
Yeah, and I also...
It really changes the race.
I completely agree, and I think that also speaks to, like, the fact that Lewis is such a seasoned driver that he can, like, see these little windows and opportunities, like, oh, these two are fighting? I'm just going to go right around that. Like, I'm just not going to, you know... He's just clever, and it's fun to see clever drivers get the opportunity to drive cleverly, because it's when you're stuck in a DRS train, when you can't even... You know what I'm saying? Your car's falling apart. You don't have that chance. But, like, he totally showed that today, which was fun.
Yeah. Lewis is... I'd love to see the different driving styles, and I feel like... Now that we're seeing younger drivers, we can see how, like, race craft has changed over the years. Because when I see Lewis drive, I'm just like, this looks different to how Charles and Max would battle each other. And maybe that speaks to, like, how weird that battle was last year. Like, maybe it was also weird because it was just two different genres of driving. Mm-hmm. But Charles is able to handle battling with Max so well, and vice versa, and I feel like that's because they know that they're on the same playing field. But seeing the way that Lewis races, they're even saying, like, oh, he should have gotten his elbows out more after the race restart, the second one, towards the end of the race, and he, like, definitely doesn't choose to do that. I think he's used to driving like a champion and doesn't want to take the risk of, like, ending up in the wall. So you're right that he kind of, like, it's clever, but it's not clever in the same way that Charles is when he's, like, toying with Max in the DRS and it's like a game of cat and mouse, like, yeah, you think I'm gonna get you here, but I got you there. It's more like he's kind of patient and he takes a different driving line and he kind of plays with tire management. Like, everyone, I guess, has their own style, but it's cool to see how he decides to, like, handle his battles.
So Zaylee, in the Silverstone Grand Prix, there are so many funky, fun, weird names for corners and things. Did you notice that?
I did notice that someone was named after Lewis, which I was shocked by.
What? Is that true? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's kind of dope.
It was like the Sir Lewis Hamilton Strait or something.
Shut up. What I want you to do, I have a list of names of corners. You will guess which ones are real and which ones are fake. Very simple.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. We have Maggots and Beckett's corner.
Real.
Yeah, they kept saying that during this race. Maggots, weird. Forks corner.
Fake.
Queen's corner.
This one is kind of hard.
What do you think?
I think it's real.
It's fake. Cops corner.
Real.
Very real. Very infamous cops.
It's very real.
Too real.
Too real.
Okay. Farm corner. It sounds so silly. All of this sounds weird to put corner. It's like, whatever. But farm.
Real.
It's real. Somerset corner.
Real.
It's fake. Made it up. Made that one up. I just wanted to go for a British
sound. It's very British.
Yeah, exactly. I needed to go like Stratfordshire, like Hertfordshire. I was going for that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Perfect. Duped, yeah. Okay, that was my game.
Oh, okay. I've got a game for you. Oh. It's very similar.
Okay, what is it?
We pre-discussed this game. We don't have to. We can tell them it's all we prepped it. We produced this show. And so I've got a list for you of fake or real.
Okay.
But this is names of F1 team principals. Okay?
Of all times past.
Like, of all time. Okay. Yeah. So you tell me whether these people ran F1 teams. Mm-hmm. Frank Sauber.
That's real.
Fake. Peter Sauber ran the Sauber team.
Oh my God. You're so rude for that. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Gunter Schmid. Pronunciation.
Now you're trying to, like, throw me off bringing these real names mixed with the fake names. I'm going to say it's fake.
Real. He ran the Royal team.
Okay.
Monisha Kaltenborn.
Fake?
It's real. I specifically chose it because Monisha, like...
Who is Monisha Kaltenborn? I've never heard of this name in my life.
I don't know, but I cannot believe that someone named Monisha ran a team.
Okay.
Okay, Peter War.
Real.
Yeah, he used to run the Lotus team. Tony Fernandez.
Real.
Yeah, Malaysian, used to run the
Lotus. I was gonna say they have a fellow Latin ex on the paddock.
Alfredi Ravetto.
Real.
Fake. His name was Manfredi Ravetto, and I spun it off. He ran the Caterham team.
Whatever.
John Booth.
As in John Wilkes Booth? As in the person who shot Abraham Lincoln?
John Booth.
Fake. I don't know.
It's real. He ran the Marussia team.
Okay.
Eric, but it seemed made up. That's why I chose it. Eric Zakowski.
Fake.
He ran the Zach Speed team. Zakowski. He took his own name. It's like, whatever. He used to run a team.
Okay.
Enzo Caloni.
Is he from Ferrari? Enzo is the name Enzo. Of the first guy.
I know.
Okay, fake.
Enzo, no, it's real.
Oh, my Enzo God. Enzo
Caloni ran the Caloni team. And this is the last one. Eric Amolier.
Real.
Fake. Eric Boulier ran the Renault team. All right, okay, so I feel like you had like failed. A 50%. In American schools, yes, you would have failed. I think in other parts of the world, though, you might have like passed.
50% is accurate because I was guessing like a twin cost for almost everyone. So,
but speaking of passing tests, I took my driving exam, my permit exam at my grown ass age and passed.
Which is
and
huge.
It was it took a lot of logic to win. I was like, to win.
Did you study?
I was like, okay, I can skip 3 questions. Yeah, I study, but that exam is hard as f- Maya. I don't know if it's just like harder in California or maybe it's just hard for me. I found it so hard.
Really?
They were like, how many miles per hour do you need to be when you're approaching railroad tracks with this sign? And I was just like, it would be like 15, 20, or 25. And in my brain, I was like, I guess like I would memorize like, oh, okay, like 25 is when there's no signs or something on residential streets. Like I was kind of broadly like studying, but I guess I didn't think about like, okay, if someone had ask me a question including the numbers 15, 18, or 20, like would I be able to like, do you know what I mean? I was like, low number.
Yeah.
You gotta go slow for a railroad track, but I didn't know like, oh, like they would be like, if a pedestrian is crossing you, do they fully cross the street or do you wait until they cross your car if it's a green light and they're still in front
of
you?
Mine was not this difficult. I think they know people in New York don't drive, so they were like, we'll just give you the softball questions.
There were some softballs mixed in that were funny, but there was definitely some hardballs. I was going to say, what's next week? Like, I guess I can look at my widgets now.
Austria? Am I bugging?
So next week, race 11, Spielberg. Is that in Austria? July 8th through 10th.
Girl, no
idea.
Oh
my God, so soon. There's a race in 4 days. And this one is going to be at 4:30 a.m.
Oh,
for me.
Funsies. fun.
Yeah. Or no, 6 a.m.
That's quite early.
Damn.
Austria. Cool. So we'll see what's happening in Austria. Spielberg.
I don't know what to accept, but yeah, it'll be lots of fun.
Lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode, guys. Cheers to the governor.
Bye.
Bye. We actually didn't even do one British accent.